just nodded in reply. Lusam realized that if he didn't show him his aura, he would never hear the end of it. So slowly, he lowered his defenses and revealed his aura to Ren. He saw Ren's face change as he saw it appear, then he slowly hid it again. "How?" he asked in a whisper, shaking his head as if he still didn't believe it was possible, even after seeing it with his own eyes. "I don't know how. I just did it one day when I was a child. My grandmother asked me to show her how I did it, but she was never able to do it herself. And I know you're going to say that she wasn't my grandmother, and that she was only my mother's Hermengild, but she will always be my grandmother to me, no matter what," Lusam replied, maybe a little too defensively.
"I'm sorry, lad. I can understand why you would feel that way. She raised and protected you after all. I can see now that she did an amazing job of keeping you safe, too. Making you promise to always hide your aura was a stroke of genius. I have no doubt you wouldn't have survived if she hadn't," Ren said.
Chuckling to himself, he added,
"And now I can also see why it was so damned hard for me to find you in Helvile."
Lusam smiled at him, then said, "Sorry, I didn't know you were looking for me." They both laughed and finished eating their fish, chatting about much more trivial matters while they did so. After they finished their food, Lusam decided to try out his new idea and attempt to locate Neela's position. Knowing how far from Stelgad she was may settle his nerves a little. On the other hand, if she was already too far ahead of them, it would no doubt make him feel even worse than he did right now. He knew that he needed to find out either way, if he could.
"Ren, have you ever travelled the road from Helvile to Stelgad before?" Lusam asked hopefully.
Ren looked up at him, then replied,
"Aye, many times, lad. Why'd you ask?"
"Do you think you could draw a simple map of the ground on the road here?" Lusam asked, pointing to a flat, clear area of ground to the side of them.
I suppose so. Why, what are you thinking?" Ren inquired suspiciously.
"I have an idea of how I may be able to track Neela. If it works, it would give us a rough idea of the speed they're travelling and whether or not we have a chance to beat them to Stelgad," Lusam replied.
Ren nodded, and after clearing a few leaves and twigs from the patch of ground, he started to score lines into the dirt with his knife. After several minutes, Lusam could make out the clear lines of a road, mountains to one side and marks representing trees to the other side. When Ren was finished, he took a step back and assessed his work. From what Lusam could see, the road formed almost a perfect arc around the forest, with only a few minor deviations.
"How accurate would you say that was?" Lusam asked.
"Well, I'm no cartographer, but I'd say it's pretty accurate. The marks along the road I've made are the usual approximate travelling distances travelled each day on horseback. Obviously, it depends on the speed of the riders. If they have a wagon, it would be slower, but if they were in a rush, they could maybe travel double that distance in a single day,"
Ren replied thoughtfully.
"Okay, I understand. I take it this is the forest we're now in?" Lusam asked, pointing to the marks representing the trees.
"Yes, that's right."
"Can you estimate where we should be right now in relation to Helvile and the road on your map?" Lusam asked, pointing at the general area that he himself expected them to be.
Ren studied his map for a few moments, then indicated a spot on the map.
"We should be somewhere in that area, but of course it's only an estimation," he replied, marking the location on his map with a small round pebble. "If you don't mind me asking, how do you intend to find Neela using a map scratched into the dirt?"
Lusam removed Neela's throwing knife from his belt and held it up for Ren to see.
"This knife is Neela's. It's one of six I enchanted for her back in Helvile. I'm pretty sure that I can track the other knives using this one. If her captor is still in possession of any of the other five knives, I should be able to get an indication of where they are now using this knife to track the others. Or at least that's the theory," Lusam replied, not sounding too confident in his ability to achieve the task.
Ren nodded in reply and took a step back to allow Lusam enough space to attempt his location spell. Lusam balanced the knife on the small pebble using its natural central balancing point. He thought to himself how much more difficult it would have been to do this with an unbalanced knife. He smiled to himself, knowing Neela would never in 1,000 years have listed this amongst the important reasons to have perfectly balanced throwing knives. Focusing his mind on the knife, and especially the enchantment he had placed upon its blade,
He pictured in his mind what he wanted to achieve, to use the knife he already had to seek its companion blades. The knife began to move slowly to the left, then it moved to the right, rocking back and forth through 180 degrees. The range of movement gradually reduced over several seconds until it stopped completely, pointing towards a position on the map. Lusam eyed through the line of where the dagger pointed towards the representation of the road and marked it with another small stone.
There, that's where we are,
Lusam said excitedly, pointing at the small stone he had just placed on the map. Ren studied the location of the stone in relation to their position, then crouched down beside the map.
If you're correct, then they are exactly where I would have expected them to be right now. To have reached that location in the time they've been traveling would mean they are neither in a rush nor taking their time traversing the road. Maintaining a pace like that would indeed take them about 9 days to reach Stilgert, which means that we should arrive before them, but only if we continue at the pace we have already set, and they don't increase their speed, of course, Ren informed Lusam.
That's good news,
Lusam said, retrieving Neela's knife and placing it safely back in his belt. We should refill the water skin while we're here. Who knows where the next water source will be? Ren glanced back over his shoulder at the steep, muddy riverbank, still wet and very slippery from where he had managed to clamber up to safety after escaping the river water. Lusam noticed the resigned look appear on Ren's face, that of a man who knew he was about to lose his dignity once more to the slippery riverbank. Lusam chuckled at the images he still had in his head of Ren's ungraceful ascent of the steep, muddy riverbank.
What's so funny? Ren asked, obviously guessing exactly why Lusam found the situation so amusing.
Lusam momentarily contemplated not saying a word and letting Ren attempt to refill the water skin just for the entertainment value. But he knew Ren was wet enough to make running very uncomfortable for the rest of the day already, and he didn't want to make his journey even more arduous than necessary just for his own entertainment.
Give me the water skin. I can fill it from here, Lusam said with a grin on his face.
Ren paused a moment before handing him the water skin, just long enough for Lusam to realize how astute a man Ren actually was. He seemed to know exactly what had been on Lusam's mind only seconds before, but he never said a word. Lusam tried very hard to keep a straight face, but failed miserably, as he often did in similar situations. He uncorked the water skin, and then manipulated the river water in a similar fashion to when he removed the gold from the river in Helvile. A long, fountain-like stream of water arced through the air from the river and terminated inside his water skin, quickly filling it to capacity. Lusam cancelled the spell, and the excess water fell to earth with a splash. Then he restoppered the water skin and held it out to Ren.
Tell me something. If you can lift water like that, can you lift heavy objects like that log over there?
Ren asked, pointing to a large fallen log.
Sure. Why?
Lusam replied. Then instantly knew what was coming next, so he decided to own up to it.
Before you ask, yes, I could have lifted us both over the river. But the truth is, I didn't even think about it until after you fell in the water. By then it was too late, and I didn't think you would be very amused with me if I floated in the air across the river bone dry while you were drip-drying on the opposite bank.
Ren stared at Lusam for what felt like an age. Then he just grunted and nodded his acceptance at what he had just been told.
Okay, let's get moving. We still have a long way to go,
Ren said, retrieving his tunic from the tree branch. And then he took off running in a southerly direction, with Lusam matching his steady pace. Chapter 9. Neela had stubbornly remained silent all afternoon, ever since the group of strange men in black robes had thundered past them on horseback earlier that day, and Skelly had callously used her as a human shield against any possible attack. She had refused to even acknowledge him, refusing his offers of conversation or even water. They had just passed through a small, sparsely populated village without stopping, and were now entering a large, flat plain on the other side, when they both once again heard the sound of galloping horses approaching from behind. Neela could tell it was only two or three riders at most this time, by the sounds of the hoofbeats as they raced towards them. Neela's hands were still tied securely to her saddle, making it impossible for her to turn and look directly at whoever it was thundering towards them. She saw Skelly turn in his saddle to see who was approaching them. Then, as he turned back, she noticed him stealthily remove a knife from his belt and conceal it in his hand. He casually pulled both horses over to the side of the road to allow the approaching riders to pass easily, and then continued his pace as if nothing was amiss. Neela realized either he expected them to ride straight past them like the last group had, or he was confident enough that he could handle the smaller group alone if they decided to challenge him. Sure enough, the two riders thundered past them without even slowing their pace, both wearing the same black robes as all the others. Even though they passed quickly, she thought she recognized one of them from when they had first left Helvile. The one on the left had a distinctive bald head with a strange design tattooed on it. She was sure it was one of the two men that had created the strange feeling of insects crawling around in her head when they had first left Helvile, but she didn't mention it to Skelly. 5 minutes later, they approached another crossroad and saw the two men that had just ridden past them talking with yet another two men in black robes. She expected Skelly to slow or even stop their horses completely, but he didn't. He didn't need to. The two men who had been guarding the crossroad mounted their horses and promptly left with the other two men, galloping out of sight long before Neela and Skelly reached the crossroad. Something was wrong. She could feel it in her bones, but she couldn't quite put her finger on it. First, she and Lusam were followed in Helvile by the man in black robes. Then, when he eventually caught up with them, he had attacked only Lusam. When she had asked Skelly if Lusam had survived the encounter, he had not mentioned anything about being attacked himself by the man in black robes. So if the man in black robes had allowed Skelly to take her unchallenged, it stood to reason that he was only ever interested in Lusam and not her at all. It also explained why none of the men in black robes guarding the crossroads they had ridden past had paid them much attention. If they were only looking for a boy, a man and a girl traveling together would not interest them. Over the next hour, several more groups of riders passed them by, all riding hard in a southerly direction, but none of them paid the slightest attention to either of them. They had also passed two crossroads during the last hour, neither of which was guarded. But why? Neela's stomach clenched as she came to the horrible conclusion. Lusam must be dead, and the men in black robes were obviously no longer needed to guard the roads out of Helvile. It was several minutes before she managed to regain her composure enough to think clearly. When she finally did, she went over all the possibilities in her head again. One thing didn't make sense, though. If Lusam was dead, why were all the men in black robes riding their horses so hard? Neela had traveled this road when she had escaped the clutches of the Hawks Guild in Stelgad several months earlier. She knew there was nowhere between Helvile and Stelgad to acquire fresh horses, and anyone riding an animal so hard could easily find themselves with a lame horse long before arriving at Stelgad. It made no sense at all to her. There had to be a good reason why so many riders would risk their horses like that. They were obviously desperate to reach Stelgad as fast as possible, but why? What could they want in Stelgad? Unless Lusam had actually survived the attack and escaped Helvile already and was on his way to Stelgad to try and rescue her. But that also made no sense. This was the only road from Helvile to Stelgad, and if he was traveling on it, the riders would have been heading back towards Helvile to intercept him, not towards Stelgad at breakneck speed. "Oh, gods," Neela said out loud as realization struck her. Lusam must be trying to reach Stelgad by going through the dark forest. It was the only logical explanation for what was happening.
What? Skelly asked, feigning interest and not bothering to look at her.
Nothing. I just needed the bathroom, but I can hold it for a while,
Neela lied. Skelly just grunted and continued riding. Neela had never entered the dark forest. In fact, she didn't know anyone who had, or even anyone foolish enough to try. The stories of the monsters that inhabited the dark forest were enough to keep most people from even considering it. Knowing that Lusam had grown up well away from the dark forest, she doubted he would even be aware of the dangers that may be awaiting him inside. She had heard the stories herself many times as she grew up in the Thieves' Guild, how anyone entering the forest at night was more often than not lost forever, never to be heard from again. Neela felt panic growing inside her just thinking about Lusam alone in such a place. She knew he had become powerful in his own right with his new magic, and more than capable of defending himself against any hungry animal or hostile human he may encounter. But against what may lurk in the darkness, she wasn't so sure. Most people agreed that the monsters within the dark forest were remnants of the Dragon Mage Wars, fought countless centuries ago, trapped there after the rift was closed by the gods Aesir and Dryden. There were three theories as to why the creatures had never left the dark forest. First, that they were somehow tied to the rift, and they couldn't travel too far from its original location. Second was that they were still controlled by either Aisha or Dryden to this day, and forbidden to leave the forest. And the third, Neela always thought the most unlikely, was the theory that the creatures could not cross water, and because the Dark Forest was surrounded on all sides by water, rivers on two sides and the sea on the other, it became a natural prison for them. Whichever it was, it didn't matter. The fact that no creature had ever been seen outside the Dark Forest since the rift closed was a good enough reason for most people not to go poking around inside to find out why. Neela closed her eyes and offered a silent prayer to Aisha to watch over Lusam while he was in the Dark Forest and keep him safe. Neela thought long and hard about why Lusam would have chosen to travel through the Dark Forest instead of taking a much easier route by road. He had more than enough money back at the bookshop to buy a horse and then come after her by road. They must have somehow known about the men in black robes waiting for him on the road, she concluded. If that were true, at least he would be on the lookout for them when he reached Stelgad, she hoped. Neela had no doubt about Lusam's ability to forage food in any forest environment. He had taught her about many edible plants and berries easily found within a forest, and she felt sure he knew about many more he hadn't yet shown her. He would be taking a much more direct route south through the forest, whereas they would need to follow the much longer arc of the road as it followed the base of the Elvine Mountains. Even so, the pace that Lusam would need to set on foot would be grueling, even to stand a chance at all of beating them to Stelgad on horseback. She needed to slow their pace a little, but not overtly enough so that Skelly would become suspicious of her motives and ultimately discover the reason why. She had no doubt that if Skelly suspected something was amiss, he would extract the truth from her one way or another. She needed a plan. Later that day, Neela noticed a few castor bean trees growing next to the road and dotted throughout the nearby fields. It was one of the many plants and trees Lusam had shown her that were poisonous, but this particular tree would suit her needs perfectly. Its seeds, when broken, caused nausea, vomiting, and other intestinal problems, but the symptoms were delayed, often not manifesting themselves for hours, sometimes even longer. It would be perfect for her needs, and Skelly shouldn't even suspect that she had anything to do with it if she did it right. Although the poison wasn't deadly in small doses, it also wasn't very pleasant apparently, often putting people out of action for at least a day or more. Neela spotted a group of the castor bean trees in the distance, close to the side of the road. She waited until they approached the copse of trees, before asking, "Can we stop, please? I need the bathroom now, I can't hold it any longer." Skelly turned in his saddle to look at her, and was greeted by a desperate look on Neela's face. He stopped the horses adjacent to the trees and dismounted. He untied Neela's hands from her saddle so she could dismount, then dragged her over to his horse. "Take off your shoes," Skelly said, removing a coil of rope from his saddle.
"My shoes?" Neela asked, confused.
"Yes, your shoes. If you're considering making a run for it, I wouldn't bother. That field is freshly cut straw. Trying to run across it barefoot would be like running over thousands of nails. I doubt you would make it 20 paces without shredding your feet. But just in case you're still considering it, remember what I told you. If you try to run, I'll make sure you never run again," he replied coldly. Skelly tied the rope securely around Neela's waist, then said, "While you're behind that tree, keep the rope moving. If the rope stops moving, I'll drag you out of that field with my horse, pants or no pants. Is that clear?"
"Yes, very clear,"
Neela replied, fighting the urge to retort. She removed her shoes and carefully stepped into the field of spikes. Skelly wasn't kidding when he said the uncut stalks would cut her bare feet to bits if she tried to run. They were doing a good job of it even at her tiptoe pace. More than once she cried out in pain as a hidden stalk punctured the skin of her feet. She was worried the length of rope would not be sufficient for her to reach the tree she needed, but as she disappeared behind the first bush, she was relieved to see several castor bean seeds already on the ground. She only needed one, and quickly removed the outer prickly casing to reveal the dark, nut-like bean inside. She placed the bean in her mouth to hide it, and then went about her business behind the bush. She wouldn't put it past Skelly to actually check to see if she'd been up to something else other than relieving her bladder. Neela had been told by Lusam that the castor beans were only poisonous if broken and could even pass through a person's gut without causing harm if they were intact. She hoped he was right about that, as it nestled under her tongue, well away from her teeth. She gingerly made her way back out of the field to where Skelly awaited her return and thankfully retrieved her shoes. Her feet were certainly worse for the excursion, but inwardly she smiled to herself at the knowledge that Skelly would suffer far worse soon enough. They were soon back on the road to Stelgad, plodding along at their usual steady pace. Neela had managed to spit the castor bean from her mouth into her hand, which hadn't been as easy as she'd expected, almost dropping the precious bean in the process when the horse jolted slightly on the uneven road. She used her thumbnails to peel the bean and expose the toxic inner nut-like center. Using her thumbnails again, she began to scratch at the nut, creating a fine dust-like powder in the palm of her hand. Any coarse material she discarded as they continued to ride for the rest of the day. Neela decided she would try and slip the powder into the water skin later, but she would wait until she was offered a drink, rather than asking for the water skin herself, which she thought would cause less suspicion later. Eventually, as the sun began to set, Skelly brought their horses to a halt. He tied both horses to a sturdy branch, then untied Neela from her saddle, allowing her to dismount from her horse. He followed the same pattern as the night before, securing Neela to the tree and removing food and water from his saddlebags before offering Neela some dried beef and fruit. She decided to take only the fruit, claiming she didn't like the taste of the last dried beef he'd given her. Her plan would work better if she didn't eat exactly the same food as Skelly. It would be easier to blame his condition on the spoiled beef, which of course it had to be, because that was the only thing he had eaten that she had not. Neela waited patiently until Skelly finally offered her the water skin. She was relieved he didn't drink from it before handing it to her, as it may have been the following day before he had drunk any more water with the poison in it. She took the water skin and unstopped it, carefully making sure not to contaminate the spout. She drank deeply, knowing it may be her last for quite a while, then deftly slipped the poison into the water skin, before restoppering it and handing it back to Skelly. Neela's heart beat furiously in her chest, like a thousand horses at full gallop. She was certain Skelly would hear it as she rested her head against the tree, feigning relaxation. If he smelt or tasted the poison, she was done for, that she knew for certain. With her eyes closed, she prayed to Aisha fervently that he wouldn't notice anything strange about the water and take his revenge on her for trying to poison him. To her immense relief, he seemed not to notice anything amiss, and drank his fill before tucking into his dried beef strips. Neela let him almost finish his third dried beef strip before finalizing her plan.
"Where did you buy that beef from?"
she asked, still resting her head against the tree she was tied to.
"Why? What difference does it make to you?"
he asked, still chewing a large chunk of the beef.
"To me? None. I'm not the one eating it. Yesterday when you gave me a strip, I didn't think it tasted or smelled quite right. I ate it anyway because I was hungry. But earlier today when I needed to stop in that field, I'm sure I paid the price for eating it. Another full day in a hot saddlebag wouldn't have made it any better to eat, I'm sure,"
Neela replied smugly. As she glanced in his direction, she saw him sniffing the small piece of beef in his hand. Then he casually tossed it over his shoulder into the field behind him.
"Good," Neela thought. "He's taken the bait."
Neela would have been happy at that. But he did something else she hadn't expected. He reached over and took the water skin, rinsed out his mouth with some of the water, then drank what remained. He noticed Neela watching him.
"Maybe you're right. It did smell a little ripe now that you mention it,"
he said, picking at his teeth with a small twig he'd found on the floor.
"It sure did,"
Neela agreed, hugely satisfied at how well her plan had worked so far. She rested her head against the tree and closed her eyes, smiling inwardly and looking forward to seeing the fruits of her labor in a few hours' time. Chapter 10 Zed watched the progress of the Vesdari through its own evil eyes. The creature had ignored every opportunity to feed on the few animals it had encountered, obeying Zed's command to ignore all else until after the boy was dead. It had stumbled across an ancient pile of dragon bones at one point, still lying in the spot where it had fallen from the sky during the Great War many centuries before. Zed could see the huge amount of power still contained within the bones of the dragon through the eyes of the Vesdari. He could also sense the immense internal struggle the creature felt at having to leave the dragon remains and pursue its intended quarry, instead of feeding on the huge amount of power right in front of it.
No doubt the creature would remember the location of the dragon bones and return later to devour their power, Zeb thought to himself. After the Great War, the few remaining Vezdari that had survived were pursued by his people relentlessly, to be used as powerful pets against the forces of Afaron, but none survived for long. It quickly became apparent that they were only able to hold a certain amount of power within themselves before they involuntarily exploded, usually killing their potential masters along with themselves. Scholars surmised that the Vezdari required the rift to be opened so they could channel their stored magic through to the other side, to be used for what or by what, nobody knew. Their appetite to devour magic knew no bounds, and Zed knew that even if the boy didn't contain enough magic to kill it, the Dragonbone certainly would. Either way, after it attacked the boy, he would no longer have to worry about the creature. It was very disorientating to walk and monitor the creature's progress through its own eyes at the same time. Often Zed would trip over a root or rock protruding from the ground, making it difficult to maintain complete control of the Vezdari. He decided it would be best to stop and wait until the creature had completed its task, rather than risk losing control of it altogether. It would be easy enough to catch up with an unconscious boy or a dead one after the creature had found him. Either way, it didn't matter to Zed. He found a large rock and settled down to watch the forthcoming confrontation unfold. It didn't take long for the creature to pick up the boy's trail, and once it did, it started moving forward with much greater speed towards its prey. Eventually, it arrived at a riverbank and stopped dead. Unwilling or unable to cross the water, it just paced up and down the riverbank, backwards and forwards, making no effort to cross. Zed mentally insisted that it cross the river, but he was met with complete rejection. The creature knew its prey, and thus its freedom, could be found on the opposite bank, but it still resolutely refused to cross the river. Eventually, Zed convinced the creature to travel further downstream. He instilled an image of a river crossing into its mind, but he could still feel its resistance to crossing the water even that way. Time seemed to drag as Zed watched the Vezdari travel downstream, looking for a natural crossing point. The river seemed to get even wider and deeper the further it traveled, never once being narrow enough to cross. This was a big problem. The further the creature traveled, the further it would need to come back to pick up the boy's trail again, and all the time the boy was getting further away. Zed could actually feel the agitation and anger felt by the creature as its prey gained ground on it, and it added to his own and made him feel even worse. Several excruciating hours passed before the creature finally managed to find a natural river crossing. Over the millennia, the river had cut deep into the base of a rock formation, creating an overhang and changing the river's natural course. It looked like the old riverbed had been refilled with debris through countless flood cycles, linking it up with the rock face and forming a natural bridge over the river. Whatever had created it, Zed didn't care. The important thing was that the creature had found a crossing, and the hunt could now resume unhindered. "Finally," Zed said out loud to himself. He had remained silent ever since the creature had encountered the water barrier, only complaining and cursing to himself quietly during the search for the elusive river crossing. Cole had the good sense to refrain from asking questions during this stressful period, something Zed was glad about. Although he had gained control of the creature soon after summoning it, it seemed to constantly challenge his ability to keep control of it, especially if Zed was trying to make it do something it wasn't happy doing. Now that it was back on the hunt again, it seemed to relinquish control to Zed far easier. It, too, was also keen to encounter the boy mage, it seemed, and sooner rather than later. Its speed seemed to increase considerably, and it arrived at the opposite riverbank to resume its tracking of the boy in less than half the time it had taken to find the river crossing. Zed could see the remains of what looked like a fresh meal of fish discarded not far from the riverbank. But he couldn't see any evidence of a campfire, which he thought was strange, but not important enough to slow the creature's pursuit over. Relentlessly onwards, the creature tracked the boy through the thick forest, never slowing down, even when the odd forest animal inadvertently crossed its path. Then it happened. There, in the distance, he could make out the boy running between the trees through the eyes of the creature. Zed allowed himself a small smile of satisfaction, knowing he would soon claim his prize and possibly be on his way home to the Empire and his family. As the Vezdari moved in silently for the kill, Zed noticed the boy wasn't alone. There was a large man with him. He wore a sword and shield strapped to his back and moved with the speed and grace of someone much smaller and lighter than his frame suggested.
When the Vesdari was within a few hundred paces of its target, he noticed something even more worrisome. The man's sword started to emit a strange blue light, and as the creature drew closer, the glow intensified.
"We have a problem,"
Zed said.
"What kind of problem?"
Cole asked, not sure if he really wanted to know or not.
"The boy isn't alone. There's another man with him."
"I'm sure it's nothing the Vesdari can't handle, if not us,"
Cole replied confidently.
"I'm sure that would be true if it were just a man. But this one is a paladin of the Betrayer."
"Oh, I see,"
Cole said, sounding far less confident this time. Lusam and Ren had been running non-stop without a break since leaving the river earlier that day. There were maybe 20 minutes of daylight left before the sun would dip beyond the horizon and plunge the forest into darkness once again. Lusam wasn't looking forward to spending yet another night within the forest. It made his skin crawl just thinking about the creatures that may be nearby while he tried to sleep. Ren had assured him that no creature from the Netherworld could ever cross Aisha's light, which was produced by his blessed sword, but it still made him uncomfortable knowing that they could at least try. Even thinking about the creatures made Lusam shiver with cold. Maybe he was just imagining it, but he was sure it had just got a lot colder in the last few seconds. Ren had increased his running speed about 10 minutes earlier. Lusam guessed he was looking for a safe spot to spend the night, preferably not completely out in the open. But he found it hard to keep pace with him this late in the day, and started to lag behind a little. Lusam was just about to call out to Ren and ask him to slow down a little, when he noticed the soft blue glow of Ren's sword strapped to his back. He realized his mistake of ignoring the earlier cold sensation too late, just as he was struck hard from behind. It felt like a tree trunk had just hit him, but it wasn't physical pain he felt. It was an incredibly strange sensation, as if his very life force was being rapidly drained from his body. He instinctively raised his magical shield to protect himself, but it had the complete opposite effect. Instead of the shield protecting him, whatever was attacking him seemed to feed even more voraciously on his power reserves by draining it directly from his shield. He forced his hands under his body and turned over to face whatever creature assailed him. What he saw turned his blood cold. A creature the size of a 10 or 11-year-old child, with evil black eyes and covered in shiny black scales, stared menacingly down at him. It was pinned to the ground by its two large hands, each finger ending in a wicked-looking claw. He tried desperately to push the creature off him, but it seemed to weigh far more than its size suggested it should. Lusam tried to scream for help, but he no longer controlled his own body. He was certain that if he didn't manage to break physical contact with this creature very soon, it would consume all of his power and kill him for sure. He concentrated hard on summoning enough power to blast the creature away from him. Once he was sure he could control the power and not just end up feeding it to the creature instead, he released the blast into the creature's chest. The creature howled as it flew through the air, impacting hard against a tree with a loud thud. Lusam gasped as the relentless drain on his power reserves finally ceased. The creature was stunned for only a moment before it picked itself up and lunged once again in Lusam's direction. He knew he had to keep the creature from making physical contact with him again, or he may not be able to cast another spell before it fully drained him. He sent another blast at the creature, lifting it clean off its feet, and sent it crashing into another tree. The creature howled again, but Lusam was sure it felt no pain and was only howling in frustration at not being able to reach him. Lusam's power reserves were almost spent. Either the creature would drain him completely, or he would end up draining himself whilst trying to defend against its attacks. Either way, he would die. The creature seemed to sense Lusam's weakness, and started to slowly circle him, ready to make its final attack. First, it crouched down on its haunches, preparing to launch itself at Lusam one last time. It flew through the air towards Lusam's throat, wicked clawed hands held out in front of it, ready to tear flesh on contact. The creature moved with blinding speed. But just before it made contact with Lusam, a blue flash streaked across his vision.
"Get back! Stay behind me!"
Ren shouted. The creature screamed in pain as Ren's sword struck it in the head, sending it hurtling away into the trees. Lusam was on the brink of passing out, his vision starting to blur around the edges. Ren noticed Lusam's unresponsiveness and grabbed him by the shoulder while still watching the creature's every move.
"Stay with me, lad," Ren said, squeezing his shoulder.
"I'm okay, I think,"
Lusam replied, shaking his head, trying to remove the haze still affecting his vision. The creature circled them both slowly like a predator,
no longer willing to charge in blindly for another attack. The creature was obviously not used to feeling physical pain like it had when Ren's sword struck it, and now it seemed to be biding its time, looking for an opportunity to strike past their defenses. Ren knew at once that this was a Vezdari standing before them, but how was that possible? It was still not quite dark, and no netherworld creature would ever surface until full dark, not to mention the Vezdari were by their very nature self-destructive. They would consume any magic or life force until they exploded. Something was very wrong here, but he didn't have time to think about that right now. He needed a plan, and fast, before the sun fully set and this creature attracted any others in the vicinity. Ren noticed the creature's attention split between his shield and Lusam standing behind him. His shield was the only one of its kind known to have survived from the time of the Great War, but it contained a huge amount of magic, and that magic may just be enough to kill this creature before they ran out of daylight.
Lusam, are you strong enough to create a force field around both of us? Ren asked, circling with the creature, keeping himself between it and Lusam.
I think so, but I'm not sure how long I could hold it for, Lusam replied.
I hope you're right, lad, or we'll both be dead if you're not, Ren said.
As he circled with the creature, he noticed several large tree roots protruding from the ground, a few of them perfect to wrap an arm through.
Do you see those big tree roots in front of me?
He asked.
Yes, I see them, replied Lusam, glancing over his shoulder.
Good. When we circle back around, I want you to link your arm through one of them. Leave me space to do the same. And when I tell you, erect the strongest force field you can around us both. Do you understand?
Okay, I'll try,
Lusam replied, unsure if he had enough power left to accomplish the task. When the roots came into range again, he did as Ren asked and hooked his arm through a sturdy-looking root. Ren then did something completely unexpected by Lusam. He stepped back and allowed the creature an unrestricted line of sight to attack Lusam. It seemed to instantly lose interest in Ren and focus completely on Lusam, who was now defenseless on the ground, holding onto the large root. Lusam's heart raced in his chest as the creature locked its eyes on him, then lunged straight for him. As the creature grew almost level with Ren, he moved with blinding speed and skewered the creature, pinning it to the ground with his sword through its leg. The creature howled in pain as his sword glowed incredibly brightly. Ren then unceremoniously jammed his shield between his sword and the creature, creating physical contact between the two. Ren dived towards Lusam, and taking hold of the sturdy root, he shouted, "Now!" Lusam let his power flow, and surrounded them both in the strongest force field he could muster, only moments before a huge explosion devastated everything within 100 paces in all directions. The power of the explosion against Lusam's force field was incredible. It only lasted a split second, but it was enough to drain him to the point of exhaustion. The last thing Lusam saw was the smoldering remains of countless trees and plants before he succumbed to the darkness. Chapter 11. It was just before dawn when Neela was awoken by the sounds of someone desperately retching nearby. It took her a moment to understand the sound that she was hearing, but when she did, she couldn't help smiling to herself. Her plan seemed to have worked perfectly so far. She remained silent, feigning sleep, and listened to Skelly as he helplessly retched over and over. After what must have been several uncomfortable minutes, Skelly reappeared next to her and slumped against the tree next to hers with a groan.
"You don't sound too good," Neela said,
instantly regretting her smug tone. Fortunately, Skelly didn't seem to notice or care. Nor did he reply to her comments, but what he did do made even Neela cringe. He picked up the water skin, unstopped it, and drank the remaining poisoned water in one. She was sure he would taste the poison, or at least detect the bits of residue in his mouth from the bottom of the water skin. Neela held her breath for what seemed like an age, but Skelly didn't seem to notice anything wrong with the water, and just tossed the empty water skin aside. The previous day, Neela had contemplated putting enough poison in the water to kill Skelly outright, but she knew for sure he would have detected it and most likely made her drink it as retribution. Maybe later, when the fresh poison took effect, she would get a chance to escape and make a run for it instead. Skelly didn't move much over the next couple of hours, and by the time it was full daylight, the rain started to fall, light at first, then turning heavier as the day wore on.
"Are you awake?" Neela asked.
"Yes. So if you're planning anything, think again,
Skelly replied, trying to sound more in control than he actually felt.
I wasn't planning anything, but if you keep puking like that, you're going to need plenty of water, and seeing as it's raining, maybe now is a good time to collect it,
Neela said smugly. Skelly thought about it for a few moments, before conceding to the fact that she was probably right. He would need plenty of water. He knew the next water source was at least a 4 or 5 hour ride away, and the way he felt right now, it may as well have been 4 or 5 days away, because there was no way he could ride a horse in his current condition. He removed a knife from his belt and cut the rope that bound her hands behind her back. He left her torso tied to the tree and her feet tied together, then tossed her the empty water skin.
You can collect the water from where you're sitting now,
he said, indicating the numerous trickles of water now falling through the tree canopy all around her. Neela filled the water skin to about a quarter full, during which time she also carefully and stealthily cleaned the opening of the water skin of any residual poison. Then she swirled the water around the inside to clean it and tipped out the possibly contaminated contents. Skelly's attention snapped to her when she emptied the contents of the water skin out onto the floor. Neela noticed Skelly watching her intently and tried to counter any of his suspicions.
What? You don't expect me to drink out of it without washing it first, do you? You've just been throwing your guts up before drinking from it,
she said, feigning revulsion. Neela continued to refill the water skin as if nothing was wrong, but her heart was thundering in her chest. She knew Skelly was extremely smart. He had to be, to have survived in his position for so long. Any hint that she may have been responsible for his current situation, and it would not end well for her. Once the water skin was finally full to the top, she poured a generous amount into her mouth to quench her own thirst, before retopping it back up and handing it to Skelly. He still had a look of uncertainty on his face as he accepted the water skin, but never voiced any thoughts on the matter, much to Neela's relief. He refastened her hands behind her back and retrieved something from his saddlebag. What it was she couldn't tell, as he placed it out of sight in his belt pouch before she could see clearly. She thought about asking him, but she had no inclination to start up any kind of conversation just then, in case he started asking questions about his sudden illness. It didn't take long for Skelly to start feeling the effects of his second, much larger dose of poison, and he spent the rest of the day either retching or lying half-curled in a ball, clutching at his stomach and groaning through the pain. Several times Neela actually felt sorry for him, until she reminded herself of her own situation as his prisoner. 2 hours later, she was almost sure Skelly had passed out and started working towards freeing her hands. If she could escape her bonds, she could take both horses and leave Skelly stranded there. It would take him days to reach Stelgad or even return to Helvil, and that was after he had recovered enough to even consider traveling so far on foot. She worked on the ropes binding her hands. Backwards and forwards she rubbed them over the edge of a stone she had found protruding from the ground behind her. She couldn't see her progress, but knew she'd rubbed the skin off her hands and fingers in several places by the stinging sensation of the fresh grazes when they got dirt in them. Several times Skelly seemed to stir from his slumber. Each time she immediately stopped what she was doing, listening carefully for his steady breathing to resume, then continued her efforts to free her hands. She'd been working on the ropes for about an hour, and could feel several strands already cut loose, tickling her wrists with each pass, so she knew she must be almost completely through the rope by now. Just as she started to actually believe her plan might work, her hopes were dashed when she noticed Skelly's eyes open, watching her attempts at escape. He didn't move a muscle, and for the briefest moment she actually thought he may have died. But her hopes were once again dashed as he slowly sat upright, never taking his cold, steely blue eyes off her.
I was just,
she started to say, when Skelly suddenly struck at her. At first she thought he'd plunged his knife into her leg as the pain exploded in her left thigh. But when he removed his hand, instead of a knife, what she saw instead was a small group of poisoned darts sticking out from her leg, the same type he'd used on her in Helvil.
Oh, so that's what you got from your bag,
she started to say, never having the chance to finish her sentence. Skelly collapsed onto the floor next to her, and a heartbeat later, she too was plunged into complete darkness as the poison quickly took effect on her. Chapter 12 Wren couldn't believe the devastation caused by the exploding creature. No matter which direction he looked, all he could see were destroyed trees and vegetation, most still smoldering from the immense power of the explosion. He had no doubts whatsoever that neither of them would have survived without the protection of Lusam's magical shield. He checked on Lusam immediately after the explosion, and was very relieved to find him still breathing, even though he didn't show any signs of consciousness. Several trees had been felled by the explosion, luckily none of which had landed on them after Lusam's magical shield had failed. There were only minutes left until nightfall, and already Ren's sword glowed with the close proximity of nearby netherworld creatures. No doubt they had been drawn by the huge magical explosion, and now waited just under the earth's surface until the final rays of sunlight had disappeared so they could once more surface and hunt for their prey. Ren found a spot where two large tree trunks had fallen across one another, forming a natural V-shape. They offered protection on two sides, with only the front area exposed, so he dragged Lusam's unconscious body into the limited protection they would provide. He quickly recovered his glowing sword, thanking Aisha that it had survived the explosion intact. But seeing his shield destroyed and devoid of magic filled him with great sorrow and a sense of loss beyond words. It was cracked from one edge to the center, and when he looked at it closely, he could no longer detect any signs of magic contained within it. The Vezdari had completely consumed its power before it had exploded, destroying the incredibly rare shield in the process. Even though the shield would no longer protect him against magical attacks, or possibly even bladed attacks, he still couldn't bear to leave it behind. It had saved his life many times, and he felt a strange connection to it, almost as if it were an old friend. Ren quickly returned to where he'd left Lusam, and began to make preparations the best he could for the coming darkness, and whatever horrors it may bring. He thrust his glowing sword into the earth just outside their camp, trying to give them as much protected space as possible, and keeping their camp well within the radius of Aisha's light. The further away he could keep any netherworld creatures, the more chance they would both have of not freezing to death during what he expected to be a very long and uncomfortable night. Kneeling in front of his sword, he prayed to Aisha, for her to grant his weapon her light once more, so they may both survive the darkness to come. Returning to a still unconscious Lusam, he placed his broken shield over Lusam's body, and started to cover him with as much foliage as he could find. It would be no substitute for a roaring fire, but it may help retain some of his body heat during the assault Ren expected to come very soon. Sure enough, as the sun disappeared over the hidden horizon and the forest slipped into darkness, a multitude of otherworldly shrieks and screams rang out in the stillness of the dark forest, raising the tiny hairs on Ren's neck and filling him with primal fear, as well as an almost irresistible urge to flee for his life. Fortunately for Ren, his many years of training at the High Temple had prepared him well for such creatures. His complete faith in Aisha and her light to protect them both served as the bedrock on which he now formed his mental defenses against what was to come. Ren moved to the rear of the V and sat down next to Lusam, resting his back up against the fallen tree, and watched the blue glow of his sword grow ever brighter. He couldn't see them yet, but he knew they were there in the darkness, just out of sight, searching the area for him and Lusam so they could feed on their very life force. It didn't take long for the first vile creature to wander into the area just outside their camp, only to be turned away by Aisha's light. One after another they came, and each was turned away by the light. They all seemed to instinctively know that Ren and Lusam were near, and they kept circling back to try and find their scent again and again. As one creature entered the light and was turned away by it, its wailing sounds of frustration only seemed to attract more of them, and as the vicious circle continued, the temperature within their camp became colder and colder. Frost started to form on the fallen leaves and branches, subtly at first, then it became ever thicker until it even coated Ren's clothing and skin. Shivering almost uncontrollably, Ren carefully and quietly started to bury himself under the same foliage that he had covered Lusam with. He knew that sharing their body heat was the only way they might both survive the night without freezing to death. It was difficult for Ren to remain silent as he moved the now frozen foliage, but once he was covered and close to Lusam's body heat, he began to feel a little warmer almost immediately. Several hours passed, and the creatures showed no sign of leaving the area around their camp. In fact, Ren was certain many more had joined them.
The entire area now looked like it was covered with a fresh blanket of snow, and Ren could no longer feel his extremities. He had been constantly praying to Aisha for the past few hours, asking for the strength to endure the night and that Lusan may also survive the brutal cold. He found himself mindlessly staring at his glowing sword, now so bright that it blinded him to everything else outside their camp in the utter darkness of the forest beyond. His thought processes were beginning to slow down with the freezing temperatures he was constantly being exposed to. It was like thinking through thick molasses. He barely noticed the moving object within the protection of their camp, silhouetted against the bright light of his sword, pacing back and forth. Suddenly it stopped and turned in his direction, locking eyes with him. Bright yellow eyes. Eyes that seemed to hide an intelligence he could not describe. Ren tried to reach for his knife, but he was so cold that his muscles would no longer obey his command. Helplessly, he lay there watching the silhouette gradually approach them both, strangely not afraid of his imminent death. He closed his eyes and said one last prayer to Aisha, before opening them for what he was sure would be the last time in this life. What he saw before him, his cold-addled mind found hard to comprehend. He found himself face to face with a huge grey direwolf, its muzzle only inches from his face, and its bright yellow eyes staring straight into his own. The direwolf turned its head to look at the dozens of netherworld creatures fighting to pass the protection of his sword, then turned back to stare once again into Ren's eyes. It raised its head to the sky and gave an ear-piercing howl of defiance to the night sky. Then it turned and ran straight past the creatures and into the dark forest beyond. The wolf yelped once as it made brief contact with one of the vile creatures, but continued running deep into the forest, with many of the netherworld creatures giving chase. With most of the creatures now gone, the air temperature rapidly warmed up, and it wasn't long before the few remaining creatures lost interest altogether, following the distant wailing of their kin. Once Ren was warm enough to move again, he checked to see if Lusan was still alive, and was relieved to see he had survived the freezing conditions seemingly unscathed. Ren took a few moments to try and comprehend what had just happened in their camp. Why had the direwolf entered their camp, and why had it not attacked them? He could only guess that the direwolf must have been chased into their camp by one of the creatures, and maybe it had felt the same irresistible urge to flee as any human did whenever a netherworld creature was nearby. Whatever the reason was, he was grateful for its sudden arrival, and even more grateful when it departed, taking most of the creatures with it, probably saving both their lives in the process. Ren gave thanks to Aisha one last time, then quickly fell into a deep sleep, thoroughly exhausted from the day's events. Ren woke at first light, glad to hear the bird songs coming from the branches above him. It seemed to be raining, but very little of it made it through the thick canopy above them to the ground below. He checked on Lusan again, but he still hadn't regained consciousness from the day before, so he retrieved his sword and went to look for breakfast. He had no idea how long Lusan would be out of action. Although his training at the High Temple had covered the basics of magic, he himself was no mage, so he had no first-hand experience of how being drained the way Lusan had would affect him. All he knew for certain was that Lusan should recover given enough time, because if he'd expended all of his magic reserves, he would have been dead already. All Ren could do now was to wait until Lusan regained consciousness. Hopefully that would be soon. Ren managed to find several large wild mushrooms and quite a few nuts, as well as various fruits on the floor near their camp. It seemed that one advantage of the local devastation was the abundance of edible foods dislodged from high up in the trees, now lying on the floor and easy to collect. He gathered as much as he could carry, then headed back to their camp, happy in the knowledge that there would be plenty of food for the next few days at least. He collected some wood and started a campfire, ready to cook the mushrooms and nuts he'd just found. This was also much easier than usual, given the vast number of branches now strewn over the forest floor since the explosion. Ren was beginning to think Lusan might not wake up at all that day, but thankfully he was proved wrong when he started to stir just before midday. It was about another 20 minutes before Lusan actually attempted to sit up. His head felt like it had been trampled by a dozen horses, and his stomach felt emptier than he could ever remember. "Ouch! My head," Lusan said quietly, holding it with both hands.
"Glad to see you awake, lad," Ren said. How long was I out for?
Lusam asked, hoping it wasn't days like the last time when he had healed Lucy.
You haven't moved since the explosion last night. It's almost midday now, so I guess about 16 hours, give or take,
Ren replied, turning some mushrooms and nuts next to the fire.
Are you hungry? I have some food cooking, and we have a pile of fruit over there,
he said, nodding towards a large pile of what looked like wild apples and pears.
You have no idea,
Lusam replied, already salivating at the mere thought of food. It was a few moments before he noticed his body was half buried under the foliage Ren had covered him with. He kicked his legs free of the branches, then started to push the foliage off his body using both hands, only to reveal Ren's ruined shield underneath. It had been almost shattered by the immense magical explosion, with a huge crack running through it, as well as numerous dents and scorch marks marring its once pristine surface. He inspected the shield using his mage sight, and was shocked to see it no longer contained even the slightest trace of magic. It had once glowed to his mage sight like a small sun, but now it was completely devoid of any power whatsoever. He recalled Ren proudly telling him of its origins and the fact that it was thought to be the only one of its kind still in existence. He knew Ren must be devastated by its loss.
I'm sorry about your shield, Ren,
Lusam said, still holding what remained of it.
Yeah, me too, lad. At least it killed that Vestari before it was destroyed. I suppose if I hadn't sacrificed the shield, nobody would have been around to use it anyway. But I will miss it, that's for sure,
he said, looking fondly at the battered shield. Lusam placed the shield against one of the tree trunks, then slowly tried to stand up, his head spinning with the effort. Once he was standing and could see over the top of the fallen logs, he was shocked at what he saw.
Whoa! What happened after I blacked out?
He asked, looking at the devastation all around him.
Well, what you can see around us is the result of the Vesdari exploding after it consumed too much magic from my shield. If you hadn't kept us both safe behind your magical shield, well, let's just say it wouldn't have ended well for us, lad.
No kidding,
Lusam agreed, trying to comprehend the immense power of the explosion that had caused so much damage.
Is that why I was covered in leaves and branches?
No. That's another story entirely,
Ren replied. Then he began to recount the story of what had happened after Lusam had blacked out the night before. How the numerous creatures had almost frozen them both to death, before a stray direwolf had blundered into their camp and eventually led most of the creatures away into the forest as it fled. Lusam listened intently to his story as he ate his fill of cooked mushrooms and nuts, then helped himself to several pieces of fruit. After Ren had finished recounting what had happened the previous night and answered a few questions which Lusam had about the event, he remained silent for a long time afterwards, seemingly lost deep in thought.
Something isn't right about you being attacked yesterday,
Ren said eventually.
What do you mean? Asked Lusam.
Ren thought for a few moments longer about the attack, then said,
It wasn't full dark when it attacked you, and it sure wasn't for however long it had been tracking you before that. A creature of the netherworld would never surface until after the sun had fully set. That's why no other creatures attacked us at the same time, even though they could sense the battle. They still remained under the surface until the sun had fully set. And the light of the sun hurts and weakens them greatly. That's why they always stay hidden until nightfall. Even stranger is the fact it was a Vesdari that attacked you. Even if they still freely roamed our world, which they don't, it should have attacked me, not you. They feed solely on magic, and my shield was by far the largest source of magic around. It should have been attracted to me like a magnet, but it attacked you instead. Were you using any magic when it attacked you? Maybe a magical shield?
No. Nothing. I did think about using my shield constantly after being attacked in Helveal to avoid any more surprise attacks. But it uses up energy just like any other activity, so running all day while maintaining a shield isn't really feasible. Or I would be completely exhausted before the end of each day,
Lusam replied.
That's what I thought, lad. So there's no reason why it should have attacked you first like it did. Vesdari can't survive for long in our world because they feed voraciously on any kind of magic they encounter. Even if it's not available in large quantities, they would still feed on the small amounts of magic within the trees and animals. Even the soil under our feet contains life, and therefore magic. If that Vesdari had somehow been a remnant of the Dragon Mage Wars, it would easily have consumed enough magic to reach its capacity and exploded centuries ago. I've been thinking about it all morning, and there's only one explanation that makes any kind of sense whatsoever, Ren said.
What's that? Lusam asked, even though he wasn't sure he wanted to know the answer to his question.
It was summoned from the Netherworld and instructed to find and kill you, Ren stated.